Yep.
Okay, so
on Park Shane. To give us Shane Park Shane. Make sure you get one, right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the mission says like this: Rabbi Shimon Omer have a Zohar b'kriya Shema u'b'tfila. Okay, a person should be Zohar in Kriya Shema and Tefillah, both those mitzvahs. Okay. So, what does that mean?
Desire. Like to be cautious.
Cautious. Careful.
To read them? And I mean, what do you mean by like cautious about reading them, or cautious about like fulfilling, like doing what you're supposed to do, like getting the ideas out of that, or like living life based on Krishna?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess the plain shot is Zohar b'kriya Shema u'tefillah means in those mitzvahs. You should be careful to fulfill those mitzvahs.
But tefillah is just tefillah.
What's that?
Tefillah is just tefillah. Where are the mitzvahs in tefillah?
Mitzvah.
What do you mean by tefillah?
What do you mean,
like
what's that?
Isn't like Rashi says, the krosa b'shasa?
Oh,
yeah, the krosa b'shasa.
That's
Kriya Shema. And tefillah, what's your question? Tefillah.
Oh, yeah.
Then what do you mean by keeping just the mitzvahs from them? I mean, isn't tefillah, I mean, aside from doing tefillah, what mitzvah is there aside from doing tefillah?
What do you mean?
Like
Kriya Shema, what mitzvah is there?
But I'm not talking about Kriya Shema, but tefillah. Like, the mitzvah is to do tefillah.
He was probably, yeah.
Yeah. But outside of that,
what do you
mean, like, for Kriya Shema, like, there's a mitzvah to read Kriya Shema, but then there's a mitzvah to actually use what you read in Kriya Shema to apply it to Yichud Hashem.
But that's not,
how do you,
that's
how do you
not mitzvah's Kriya Shema.
Well, that's my question. My question is, what is the mitzvah?
In other words, the plain shot would seem to be that Zohar b'kriya Shema u'b'tefillah means the mitzvah that you should be careful to perform these mitzvahs.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the mitzvah, right. Okay. Mitzvah of Kriya Shema, be careful to fulfill this mitzvah. And the mitzvah of tefillah, the chiyuv tefillah, you should be careful to fulfill that mitzvah. I mean, on a plain level, right, I would say that's what the Mishnah's telling you, right?
Right.
The only question is, I mean, what do you mean be careful with these mitzvahs? I mean, every mitzvah you have to fulfill, every mitzvah, right? We're not careful with one mitzvah over another. I mean, every mitzvah a person's chayav to do.
Right.
So a person should be zahir to be fulfilled and call mitzvah Shabbat Torah. Right? Okay.
Right.
What's that?
No, yeah, I was just along this. I was thinking, like, if you said, like, why also just these two? I mean, is it just because, like, they have, you know, every day you're, you know, it's an obligation every day? Like, so it's tittus, you know? Film.
Right. So
I think Rashi does its film, but they don't have, like, Kirsa, but.
Right.
Like, I can understand maybe, you know, it's not going to tell you lulav, because.
Right.
Which, it's not a constant thing. You need to be very, you know, careful in mitzvah lulav. I don't even, you know, considering mitzvah lulav right now.
Right. But tefillin, so you could say, tefillin, right? Any mitzvah that you have, right? Exactly. Okay, so why are they singing out Kriya Shema and tefillin? Okay. So one shot is Rebbeinu Yonah. Okay, he says the reason why, he says his b'kriya Shema yoser mina tefila, mitnei shezman tefila gadol, v'rachav hu ad arba shals. Zman kriya Shema katzer u'mechuvan ad hanesachama kevasikin. V'zehu lashon heve zaher ki tzarech zehirus gadola. Okay.
What happened to 3 hours?
Wow.
Say that again?
What happened to 3 hours?
He's fine with the the first Monday I'm running Kamara Bros.
Right.
Really?
He's passing the Rabbi Huda.
Right. I guess he held that it was, I don't know, but it seems he held that the mitzvah was Adahane Sahama. I don't know if there's any B'diev after that, but basically, according to Rabbi Yonah, that's the mitzvah, Adahane Sahama.
Does he actually hold that way in Brachos?
Yeah. Because
he is in Brachos,
right?
Right. Does he heal someone in Brachos?
Yeah. Well, there's three different shitas in Brachos.
Okay. Well, let's assume for the time being that that's the way he'll. Okay. So that's why he's saying that you have to be more Zohar from Kriya Shema than from Tefillah, right? Because the time is very short. So the person has to be Zohar. Okay, so
I think Adam wants to call in, right?
Adam wants to call in?
Yeah.
You want it? Okay. You have the number.
Yeah.
You
want it?
Thank you for using ConferenceTown.com. If you are the moderator, please press 1. Otherwise, please hold to be placed into the conference. You are currently the only person in this conference.
Okay, so according to the Rabbeinu Yonah, it's a specific, it's a halacha in Kriya Shema because it's a very short amount of time. Okay? Okay. And if you don't hold that way, let's say you hold a Kriya Shema like we hold Kriya Shema, you have 3 hours.
I mean, it seems like it's so long. I mean, because it feels also.
What's that? It feels also clear, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, you can see you should be more Zahir for Kriya Shema than for Tefillah, okay? But certainly if you hold that, it's not Anetzachama. It's, you have 3 hours to do it. So what's the emergency then? Right? Why is the Mishnah saying Zahir?
No matter who you hold, like, it's always going to be shorter amount of time for Kriya Shema, right?
It's going to be shorter than Tefillah, correct. But really, but
you're both being Zahir, though.
What's that?
You're being Zahir in both of them.
Being Zahir in both of them. That's right. So this would explain why, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, I have to be more Zahir by Kriya Shema. True. Okay, but what's the idea of Zahiris? That Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't really address. What's the idea of Zahiris in general by, let's say, Tefillah, and according to us, Tefillah and Kriya Shema? Yeah. Right? Why do I have to be more concerned with this mitzvah than any other mitzvah?
Yeah. And then you could say that everyone has like their own daily routines. So when they get caught up in what they're doing, you're not necessarily going to be so careful about other mitzvahs that they need to take care of.
Okay.
So, I mean, Zahir is saying that you shouldn't, your day should be set up with these as priority.
Okay.
That's what I need to make sure is Kriya Shema and Tefillah before I start taking care of necessarily other daily activities.
Correct. I mean, base. In other words, a person taking into consideration that's the way the person generally doesn't give priority to these things, doesn't is his choice to avoid these things.
Right.
Right. Correct. Correct. That's right.
Or like I have to, you know, just time. I have time.
Right. Right. There is a certain kind of resistance against these where a person tries to push it off. And as a matter of fact, you see that the Gemara says that, right, that if a person, it's like a bazaar. If a person goes to his friend before tefillah, right, it's like a read of bazaar. Right, that's right. Correct. So, that's right. So, well, in other words, before you even speak about that, right, really, you have to differentiate what area the mission is talking about. Because when you say mitzvos, right, mitzvos really take in two frameworks. There are mitzvos in terms of the system, right? The tayag mitzvos in terms of a halachic system, as a system of the Torah. So in that respect, all the mitzvos are the same. Right, insofar as a mitzvah is part of a system of tayyag, every mitzvah person's chayiv in equally. You can't say one mitzvah is more important than another, right? But mitzvah is also a means of perfection. Correct. So in terms of a means of perfection, you could say one mitzvah is more related, is more essential to perfection, or more basic to perfection than another mitzvah. In terms of the mitzvos as an entity of the system of halacha, each mitzvah is equally important. A person's chayiv a mitzvah, he's chayiv, right? But a mitzvah also is a means to perfection. So in terms of perfection, one mitzvah could be different than another mitzvah, right? So the Mishnah must be talking, when it says zohir, it's not talking about a mitzvah insofar as it is a part of the system of tayyag. Because in terms of the system of tayyag, every mitzvah, of course, is chayiv. Right? But it's speaking in terms of the mitzvah as a means of perfection. As a means of perfection, then we could differentiate what perfection does one mitzvah gives you a different perfection than another mitzvah, or as a different level of perfection than another mitzvah. Right? In terms of the philosophic purpose of the mitzvah, a mitzvah could have a different philosophic purpose. Okay? So the question is, in terms of, in that framework, the mitzvah, insofar as it's a means to perfection, what's the difference between the mitzvahs of tefillah and kriya shema and other mitzvahs? What is the idea? What is the perfection of the philosophic idea of tefillah and kriya shema? Yeah.
Well, at least kriya shema and tefillah seems to be like the almost the fundamentals of like just Judaism. Like you have Yichud Hashem and then you have Torah.
Yeah, right.
If you don't have that, if you don't start off your day with that, if you don't have zero in that respect, how can you do any other mitzvah? This is almost like a prerequisite. I don't want to say like prerequisite, but it's almost like if you don't have Yichud Hashem, how can you like put on Torah?
You don't have Yichud Hashem, you don't have anything. Right. And so far as the philosophic idea behind it, it would seem Kriya Shema is the most basic thing. I mean, Yichud Hashem. Without Yichud Hashem, what do you have? You have nothing. Right? The Kriya Shema is really, we say Kriya Shema is Kabbal Salmach HaShemayim, where a person has a recognition of Yichud Hashem. Right?
That's even like the Machlokas.
What's that?
It's like even the Machlokas on what you say with the sunrise. Like either Tefillah or Kriya Shema, because of the Machlokas. Like, do you say, like, what's greater, like, Kabbalah Salmach HaShemayim, or the fact that you're an Eved Hashem? Maybe if you say it with Hanetz Chama, it shows, like, what's, like...
Oh, I see. You Hanetz Chama, which...
Yeah, there's a Machlokas, do you either say Kriya Shema with the sunrise, or Tefillah with the sunrise?
I see.
And I think the Rambam mentions, for Tefillah, it's Eved Hashem, and, like, you have Kriya Shema, that's Kabbalah Salmach HaShemayim, and...
Right.
Okay. How is that idea that you should start off your day with those ideas?
Right.
First thing you do when
that's
you wake up.
First thing you do, right. Exactly. That's right. So in terms of what Kriya Shema really is, think it's really Kabbalah's Olmo Fushamayim. It's a recognition of God's existence in Yichud Hashem. Right? Of course, it's an interesting thing because you already have a mitzvah. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Right? You have a mitzvah of Yedias Hashem. So, what really is the idea of Kabbalah's Olmo Fushamayim? If you say Kabbalah's Olmo Fushamayim, means the person should recognize God's existence in Yichud Hashem. So that's already a mitzvah. The person has to have Yedias Hashem. So why is Kriya Shema not a duplication of that? You know what I mean? In other words, if Kriya Shema means a person should have a recognition of Yichud Hashem, then what's the mitzvah of Manoch Hashem Elokecha? Isn't that a mitzvah? If you look in the beginning of the Rambam, right, the Rambam says the mitzvah of Yedias Hashem is Leidas Hashem and Yichudo, right? So that is really the first mitzvah in the Rambam. So what is the difference between that mitzvah and the halacha of Kabbalah Olmo Fushamayim? It would seem on the surface it's a duplication of the of mitzvah of Yedias Hashem. What does the Rambam say? Okay, the God's existence, everything depends on his existence. Okay, so the idea, Lenochi Hashem Elokecha, right, includes these ideas. If a person thinks that God is a goof, if a person thinks that God is many, so that's not a Lenochi Hashem. The God that he believes in is not a Hashem. Right? So the idea of Yichud Hashem is part of the mitzvah of Lenochi Hashem Elokecha. He says in Halacha Vav, V'yidiyas davar zeh mitzvah saseh shenema anoch Hashem Elokecha v'chol hamale al daito sheyesh sham eloka acher chutz mizeh avar belo saseh shenema lo yelacha lokim achareim al panai v'kafer be'ikar shezehu ha'ikar agadah shakal talibo. Right, so a person has to know Yichud Hashem to have the mitzvah, the first mitzvah. So why do I have a second mitzvah of Kabbalah Olmo Fushamayim to know, to say that there's that Hashem is Echad? I already have the mitzvah. And it's not just the halacha of Dibor. I mean, when a person says Shema, then if he just says it and he doesn't know what he's saying, he's not Yotzei. So the mitzvah is to enunciate that idea, that a person should have that idea. But a person already has to have that idea.
Is the question? question, why are they two separate mitzvahs? Or why are they listed as two separate mitzvahs?
What are the two separate mitzvahs? Because, right, what is the mitzvah? In other words, what is the mitzvah of Shema? You can't say the mitzvah of Shema is that a person should know Yedias Hashem, because that's the first mitzvah.
Right.
So what is the mitzvah of Shema? That a person should just go over this in his mind? I mean, either he has the idea or he doesn't have the idea. And the mitzvah is not just to verbalize, because verbalizing is nothing if the person doesn't know it. So the verbal is nothing. So the person has to know it. So what's the mitzvah of Shema? To know it? I already have that mitzvah. What is the mitzvah of Kabbalas Olmo Hushamayim?
Well, you can have a mitzvah just to know.
Yes.
But that's not, I mean, that's, that, this, that, that, that idea does exist. But
okay.
What Shema is doing is kind of like putting in like a framework, I guess.
Okay.
But it's not like right now, like without Shema, it's just like there's a mitzvah that exists.
Okay.
And if I have it, if I, you know, think about it, then I've kind of completed the mitzvah, I guess, right then and there, I did the mitzvah.
Right.
But Shema is kind of putting it in, like, in, a, I guess, a framework, where you have this mitzvah, I guess even within Shema, like, v'shachruch of kamecha. So, like, the whole day is kind of, like, encompassed.
Okay, well, let's say the first mitzvah. Let's say you didn't have Shema. Then what would the first mitzvah be? Of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, what would that mitzvah be? Yeah.
I think we said a few weeks ago it's acquiring proofs about God.
Okay, good.
Right.
So that mitzvah would be that a person has rational knowledge that God exists. And God exists and is yichud and that he's not a goof. The correct idea of God he has, and he has it based on a rational idea. Rational knowledge. Okay, that would be the mitzvah. So if I have that knowledge and I understand those concepts, so I'm yotzei the mitzvah. It doesn't mean I have to think about that idea every second, right? But it's an idea, it's knowledge that I have acquired. Okay? So now if I didn't have Shema, that would be the mitzvah. Right? To have this knowledge and to know the concepts based on knowledge. Okay, based on first-hand investigation and clear knowledge of God's existence. Okay, so I'd be yotzei the mitzvah. Right, and as if I knew the idea from Sinai, so then I don't have the mitzvah b'shalei Musa. The mitzvah b'shalei Musa is where I really have the knowledge directly. Okay, where I've gone through the ideas, I see why it is that God must exist. But not only from second-hand knowledge, not only from Sinai, I know that God does exist, but to be Yotzei B'Shalei Musa, a person has to understand from knowledge to be able to show that God exists even if you don't have Sinai, directly, through his investigation. Okay, and that would be the mitzvah B'Shalei Musa. Like Avraham Avinu came to the conclusion that there must be a first cause even without the phenomenon of Sinai. But he knew it from his investigation and his knowledge of his studies that there has to be a first cause to the world. Okay? So if a person has that knowledge, he's Yotzei the Mitzvah, B'Shalei Musa, of Yedias Hashem. Okay? So now what does Shema add to that? I mean, if you're going to tell me Shema is simply go over that thing in your mind, so that's the mitzvah already. That's just going over the same mitzvah of Yedias Hashem. So what is Shema? Uttering, verbalizing? I mean, verbalizing is just another form of knowledge. It's not the words, right? It's we don't say that when a person thinks of Torah, he has one mitzvah. But if he actually verbalizes and learns audibly, that's a different mitzvah. What do you mean? That's the mitzvah of Yedia, the Talmud Torah. If I learn Talmud Torah in my mind only, I'm not Yotze B'Shlemus. I'm only Yotze if I verbalize and I clarify the ideas. So too with Yedias Hashem. Anochi Hashem, the first mitzvah, a person should really clarify and have a complete knowledge, and then he's out to the mitzvah. Okay, so what's the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema?
Rabbi Markowitz?
Yes.
Hi, it's Adam. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good. So I thought that Kriyat Shema had a component of Kabbalah's Ol Malchut Shamayim. So in addition to just recognizing God's unity in Yedias Hashem, there's an idea of recognizing Him as being the, your master.
Okay.
That strikes me as somewhat of a philosophical idea as well. So not only does God, is there the component of God being one and being the ruler of the universe, but Him having direct, authority over you, and that you're subserving yourself to Him.
Okay, that's good. So what is the difference? What you're saying is correct. So could you define what's the difference? What's the difference in Kabbalah Ol Malchut Shamayim, right? Which includes obviously Yedias Hashem and Yedias Hashem.
I suppose you could have Yedias Hashem as a recognition, like an objective knowledge of the existence and of this being called God, but Kabbalah Ol Malchut Shamayim is the idea of putting yourself in a relationship with Him and accepting that relationship.
Okay, good. Very good. Right? You see it? In other words, you can have knowledge could be in two ways. I could have an objective recognition of a fact, right? Of a reality. I have a recognition, an intellectual recognition that there's a certain reality. But I don't necessarily, it depends how I relate to that reality, right? Because a person has really two parts to his nature. He has a rational part and he has an emotional part. So I could recognize something rationally, but emotionally I don't relate to it. It doesn't really, I don't relate to it in terms of my personal internal life. I don't relate to that. Okay? So the first mitzvah is that a person should have a certain recognition, just like a person could have a recognition of mathematics. Okay? But how important is the mathematics to me in my personal life? Might not be too important. I know these ideas are true. Okay? That exists in one compartment of my mind. But it's not really something that affects me personally too much in my life. Okay? So I could say that about mathematics. Fine, that's an area of knowledge, but somehow I'm not affected by it in a personal way. Okay? But when it comes to God, you can't say that. Okay? Because God, we say that once a person has a recognition that there's a source to reality, there's something wrong if he ignores that source. There's a disconnect. Okay? So it's possible to have a disconnect because a person has his rational faculty and then he has an emotional component to his nature. So a person could recognize that reality is a certain way, you see, and that's an intellectual recognition. But emotionally, he could have a resistance to that idea. And he could separate himself and say, rationally, I recognize that reality is a certain way. There's a source to reality. There's the whole world exists as a product of this reality, and this is really the true reality. And yet emotionally, I feel reality is something else. I feel reality is, now I get back to my everyday life. I want to get into business. I want to get into social. I want to, you know, I want to gain satisfaction from human recognition, from getting human approval. That's my life. My life is that other people should approve of me and look up to me. You see? So emotionally, what I value is one thing. I value how great I am. Intellectually, I realize I'm nothing because what am I? There's a whole source to reality, and there's a being that really exists. And we, our existence, is really just a flimsy contingent existence. If not for that being's will, we wouldn't even exist. You see? So a person can live a dichotomized life. He could feel on one hand, he's rationally, he knows he's like nothing. He exists for a few seconds and that's it. And then there's a being that has real existence. And emotionally, a person could feel, the center, I'm the center of the universe. Everything revolves around me. And if I can get people to recognize me, oh, I have a great future, right? So a person has two parts of his nature, and he can live a dichotomized life. So the mitzvah of the first mitzvah of Yedias Hashem is that a person should have a recognition of the truth. A person doesn't recognize the truth, nothing to talk about, right? A person has to have a recognition of what is true. But now there's another step. Even when once a person recognizes what is true, does he embrace that truth internally? Does this become real to him in terms of his full nature? You see? Or is it only real in one respect? So that is the second mitzvah. The second mitzvah is not a new concept intellectually. There's no new concept. The concept he has already. But the question is how he relates to that concept. Does he incorporate it internally? Is it a reality internally? Is that the world he's living in? What world is he living in? He knows the real world. The question is, which world is he living in? See, that's the idea of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim, that the person is supposed to have a recognition, think in his mind, that this really is the real world, and the world that I'm... The other world is just, you know, so to speak, an imaginary thing that I'm drawn to, but this is the real reality. You see? And the reality the emotions are telling me is sort of something pictured by the emotions, but does not conform to what's real. Okay? That's Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. You see? And that's why a person has to go over the idea again. Because it's not the same going over. It's not the rational going over. It's the going over with the emotion. You see? That's the added element. It's a different process. You see? It involves the mind, but it's a different kind of process. That's why they call it Kabbalah. I accept this. Well, what do you mean, accept it? Do you know it's true or don't you know it's true? Right? So the answer is, I know it's true, but the question is, do I accept it? That's a different process. That's a very slow process, accepting the truth. Right? That's the Kabbalah. And that's why you have the mitzvah twice a day. Obviously, you can't have it every second, because a person has to also function. Right, and insofar he's improving himself, but insofar as he lives a dual type of existence, so he's momentarily he has that recognition, he's Mekabel, and then he perhaps slips back. So that's okay, because that's part of the way a person progresses. Okay, but the Kabbalah he has to have twice a day, and that's really the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. That's why it's a Kabbalah. Right? It's a very interesting thing. It's a worked out system. It's intellectual, but it's not just intellectual. Just intellectual is not going to do it.
So what about tefillah?
What's that?
What about tefillah?
What about tefillah? That's right. So how does tefillah fit in there? Now, is the guy's Makabel the true reality, and he's on that level? Okay, so that's it. He's got the Kabbalah. So you could see why. So the initially when we differentiated that in mitzvos you have mitzvos insofar as they're part of a system. So in terms of that chiyuvah mitzvah, every mitzvah person is chayiv in. But mitzvah is also an element in perfection. So this is really the idea in terms of the perfection of Kriya Shema is in terms of this idea of being mekabel. And that's why it's a very important mitzvah, because it's like you were saying, that it's really the foundation. The person doesn't have the recognition and the Kabbalah. And what's everything he's doing, what's the purpose? Why is he doing it? He's obviously has some kind of motive that's not really in line with the purpose of the Torah.
It's funny, I met an atheist at Shul.
Yep.
And he told me he's public about it. Like, yeah, I'm an atheist. But I see him put on Tefillin. Why he put on Tefillin for an atheist? I don't remember his answer, but...
Well, maybe
it feels
guilty.
It's pretty funny, yeah, maybe.
It's
really
funny.
Interesting. I mean, it's contrary to
the thing, yeah. So that's actually the end of this Mishnah. You'll see that's relevant.
Oh, really?
Yes. The idea of a person, what they commonly call a hypocrite.
Yeah.
He doesn't keep this, but he keeps this. Yes, right. Correct. But you see that's... interesting, and it brings up an interesting point. Yeah, but getting back to this, right? So the question is, so if I have Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim, so I have that recognition, so now what is the tefillah? What role does the tefillah play in that it seems like it's a duo, Kriya Shema and tefillah? How does tefillah fit in to that concept of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim?
It's almost like tefillah, in a way, it's almost like it puts you in a mindset to, like, to be ready to accept Kabbalah and Hashem, in terms of, like, because tefillah, the one tefillah is to make yourself subservient to Hashem.
Okay.
In a way, like, it shows that you're an Eved Hashem, like, you're putting yourself beneath everything else, and, you know, beneath Hashem, and therefore somehow... it's almost like a prerequisite
to the Kabbalah.
Yeah, but it's funny because like then why is it feel why is it feel after Kabbalah?
Right, tefillah comes after Kabbalah.
Yeah, I don't know, but
that's right.
That's all I could think of.
But I mean, I think you have a good idea. In other words, but why are you saying that the avdus is a prerequisite to the Kabbalah?
Maybe it's not. It's actually, almost like it's just
the reverse.
Yeah.
Right. In other words, the Kabbalah is a prerequisite to the Avdus.
Oh, really? Okay, I guess I was thinking, because if you put yourself in a situation where you, as an Eved Hashem, you could be more willing, you could be more accepting of...
See, the thing is like this.
I don't know.
That's a good point. In other words, what do we mean by Eved Hashem? If we know the true idea of Eved Hashem, we'd see why. Because normally, you're right, a human Eved, a person that's serving a human king, that's the way it works.
Yeah.
He's not going to accept the king. In other words, that helps him. He accepts. Once he serves, he becomes in servitude, so eventually he accepts his role. Right? He can't accept his role before he carries out the role. Once he carries out the role, then eventually there's an acceptance. Okay, that's of course not the kind of acceptance we're looking for, because right, that acceptance is like sort of just a, surrender. Like he's sort of okay, that's it. He throws up his hands. Right. He's resigned. It's resignation. He's resigned to the fact that he's an Eved. Yeah.
Isn't that maybe I just don't understand the idea? But isn't that like a Nas Eved Ishmael? Meaning, isn't that the way? Meaning, we're going to do, and then we're going to, you know, here. So would it make sense to first be the Eved, and then...
Well, that's a different concept. Nasa Venishma, right? Because how could you do before you for you here. In other words, if I didn't hear it, I don't understand it. So what am I doing? Why am I keeping mitzvos if I don't have a recognition that the mitzvos are good? Don't I first have to have that explained to me? Why is this good? And then I'll do it. I do it first, and then I'm gonna understand it. That would seem to be contrary to logical reasoning, right? You want to explain to a person why you should do a thing. Tell them, okay, do it first, then I'll explain it to you. You know what I mean? Why would that would seem to be the reverse order? You have to explain to a person what the good is, and then he'll want to do it. Then he'll understand a reason why he should do this action, right? So nasav nishma really doesn't mean that we're going to first do it and then we'll understand. It means that there's two types of understanding. In other words, like if a doctor tells me to take medicine, I'm not taking the medicine totally in ignorance, because why should I listen to the doctor? Right? So I have knowledge, but the knowledge is not of the medicine itself. But the knowledge is a secondhand knowledge. I know the doctor's intelligent, so based on that knowledge, I'm following what he says.
Right.
But I may not know what the benefit of the particular medicine is, but I know that it is beneficial. I just don't know the particular benefit, why it's beneficial, but I must know that this is the beneficial thing to do. So that I have knowledge of.
So why can't you say the same thing here? Obviously, it's kind of
right.
Not the same situation, but in terms of the tefillah and then the Kabbalah, so much more. I mean,
no,
feeling and being the Eved is you're not just being an Eved in terms of,
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You have an understanding. You know that this is what, in some understanding, that this is what you're supposed to, this is what you need to be doing.
Right.
And then once you get involved in that, then you'll have the greater understanding of the purpose of this. Or what you're striving to get towards. But
right.
there's still an understanding in being an Eved first.
Okay. Okay, so, but hold that for 1 second, okay? Let's come back to that. But let's take the first point. In other words, what's the idea of Avdus? Right? Because you say, what do you mean Eved Hashem? Why are we an Eved Hashem? We're not a slave of God. I mean, God doesn't need us to do anything for Him, so we're doing it for ourselves. So how are we an Eved? Right? You're doing this because they're good. So that's not an Eved. You are operating for your own benefit. An Eved works for what makes a person an Eved? Because he's acting for the benefit of the other person, not for himself. But we're acting for our own. So we're not an Eved. That's not obvious. We're not serving God. We're serving ourselves. Right? So why do we say that's an Eved Hashem? What's the idea of obvious? Right? Why do you consider that Eved Hashem? If I keep the mitzvahs, we say you're an Eved Hashem. Right?
Like,
yeah.
I guess it's almost as if you're trying to model yourself in that image.
Okay.
Not necessarily that you're a slave, but you're trying to actualize the mitzvahs, and ultimately you're trying to, like, be that.
That's right.
Be
sure.
That.
That's right, exactly.
If you could.
Right. And as in an Eved, there's two concepts. One concept is that his avdus is that he acts to benefit the master, right? But the other concept is, the second aspect of avdus is that he has to conform to the master's will. Now, in a normal case, the Eved is conforming to the master's will to serve the master, for the benefit of the master. So with regard to Hashem, with regard to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that concept is not there. But the first concept is there, that we're conforming to God's reality, that there's a certain reality that we're trying to conform to, Why are we doing that? Because that's the best thing for us, really. You see? But it's obvious in the sense that our actions are not determined by what our emotions are telling us. Our actions are not determined by a reality that we create, but there's a reality that pre-exists. And we find ourselves in this world, and our actions are determined to conform to that pre-existing reality. You see, so in that sense, we're an evid. We're not the sources of reality. The Adon, he makes up the system. God made up the system, so to speak. Not really. But it's a reality, but right, God made up. He's the source of the reality. He's the one that set up the system. So in that sense, he's the Adam. You see, it's his world. Now we find ourselves in this world, and now we're not initiators of reality, but we have to conform to reality. That's an evidence. You see, we have to conform to the status quo, to this existing framework. You see, so in that sense, God's the Adon, and we are the Avadim. You see, but not in the sense, in the human sense, because in the human sense, the Adon sets up an artificial system for his benefit. You see, but in the human sense, there really is no Adon. He's not a real Adon. He just forces the other person to force him in that position. Why? Because there is no real system like that. He made up his own system. He came along and he established a crazy system, and now he grabs a guy and forces him to, or whatever it is, either by force or by payment, whatever it is. But he imposes his artificial system on that guy.
Do we see that with Eliezer?
What's that?
We see that with Eliezer.
What do you mean?
I guess my question is: with Eliezer, did Eliezer try to model himself after Abraham, or was he just a servant?
Well, Abraham's. Didn't have an artificial system. In other words, Avraham was an Eved himself. He functioned within God's system. You see, so any Eved of his was also functioning under God's system, because Avraham didn't create a new system. You see, so the only difference between a human Adon and God is the nature of the system. A human Adon, the system is an artificial one. And therefore, that's why the person has to be forced to conform. Because it's an artificial system. It's not helping the Eved. You see? But if the system is a real system, then on the contrary, if the Eved would conform to that system, it would be the greatest thing for the Eved. Because that's the system he exists in, and it's a real system. So the Eved is watching that system, seeing how he has to conform, and the moment he conforms perfectly, he has the greatest life. You see? But in an artificial system, if the Eved conforms perfectly, he has the worst life, because it's an artificial system. And it's not built for his benefit, and it has nothing to do with him. So obviously, if he forces himself to conform to a crazy system, he has a bad life. You see? So in that sense, we're an Eved. Okay? So the Avdus is to conform to this unbelievable system, this great system. Yes, a person loves to be an Eved. It's the greatest possible life he can have. And on the contrary, if he tries to gain chayrus, it'll be the worst, most miserable type of existence. It means he's going to live in a way that nothing in the system works. Who would want that? So it's a funny thing. I mean, the Torah is like exactly like opposite, you would think, on a superficial sense. You say, Eved wants to be an Eved. Right. The greatest thing. That's what we're striving for, Avdus. Yeah.
So in terms of what we actually say during Tefillah, where do you see that it's Avdus?
Okay, well, first of all, you're the one that said Avdus. I didn't say
Avdus.
Oh,
the Rambam.
Well,
I'm just getting it from the Rambam. Just by the way,
I mean, you're right. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that, you know, I don't want to step in.
No, I know, because I'm just
an Mepharish for you.
No, I appreciate that.
Maybe you're
right. Better than I did.
You need the person with the idea, and then okay.
Yeah. Oh, he the rammer just smashed him. Just, you know, just by the way, you know, you just dive in. You're practically like stand like this.
Right.
Just give me a second.
All right. Well, what is the safer safer of Voda? Is it? Oh no, it's not.
Safer. It's Ava.
Ava. It's just right, but it's a Voda Shibboleth. Now, isn't that Tefillah? Isn't Tefillah called a Voda Shibboleth? Right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Voda Shibboleth, right?
I think so.
It's all a Voda Shibboleth. The Tefillah, Kriya Shema, Voda Shibboleth. So what was your question? Where do you see?
Yeah.
That's a Voda. So in what way is that a Voda Shibboleth?
Right.
Right, that's your question. Right?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the brachos, you know.
Right.
Like in Avram,
Right.
How is that?
Tell us that about the Bible. Okay. So that's good. That's a good question. Notice you're not asking how we know it's Avoda, but where you see the Avoda in Tefillah. Right?
Right, yeah.
So what do you say?
The message is really palpable, young. Shenamar Valvadatam and Hashem Legeo.
Ah.
That's like the first.
What does it say again? What's the pasuk?
Shenamar ve'avodatam et Hashem Lekeichem. That's where you get Tefillah from.
Avodatam.
I think so.
Let me
just
see. You should serve the Lord your God. Very good. That's very good. That's exactly right. In other words, very good. Look at the first line of the Rambam. I mean, it's a good point. Mitzvah saseh lehispala b'chol yom. It's a mitzvah to be mispala every day. Where do you see that? Shenemar v'avadatem es Hashem Elokeichem. You should serve the Lord your God. Right? And then naturally the Rambam says, well, what do you mean? That's talking about service. Who says that's a tefillah? That means I should go out in the field and, I don't know, shovel something. Right? He says, Mi pia shmua amru shavoda zu hi tefillah. What is this avoda tefillah? The nemar, la'avdo b'chol levavachem, serve him with all your heart. So that's a funny thing. What do you mean serve him with your heart? I mean, service is with your hands. Right? But what do you mean serve him with your heart? Amru chachamim, eze hi avoda shebelev. What kind of avoda is with your heart? Your heart's working hard, but Zut tefillah. Okay, so that's tefillah. Right? Means the heart means with your thoughts. Right? How can you serve a person with your thoughts? I mean, that's a very easy avodas. So that is what the avoda refers to, with your thoughts, with tefillah. Okay? So the question is, how is that? What's the avoda of tefillah? Why is that? Why is that considered avoda? It's an avoda of your thoughts. But when you look through the tefillah, where's the avoda?
I mean, the fact that the bakashos isn't that meaning you recognize that he is the only person that can answer these questions, answer these requests.
Okay.
And by that, it shows that you're recognizing him as the, I guess, for lack of a better term, he's the master,
It's his framework.
It's like you recognize it's his framework, and you recognize he is the person who I am directing all of my avodas to.
Right. He's the source. He's the source of reality. And his reality is the reality.
Just the tefillah itself.
That's right. Now, the tefillah is because a person has needs. That he has a necessity, his existence involves needs and wants, things he needs.
It's like when you're a kid, you ask your parents, I want money, I want a game, but I don't know, I want certain things. Because you recognize that they're the ones who can provide for that.
That's right, that's right.
Like you're almost like under their control.
They are the ones, it's their domain, right. So the That's right. So tefillah is really recognition that it's God's domain. It's really God's domain, and I have certain needs and defects that I can't, that I need to conform and to have fulfilled in order to function in that domain. If I don't have these things, I can't function properly in this domain, in God's domain. So you said the tefillah is really, in other words, the Kriya Shema is a recognition that it's God's domain. That you need first. If you don't recognize that this is God's domain, there's nothing to talk about. So that's a recognition in terms of the person's personality, that this is God's domain I'm existing in. You see? But really, if I don't do the tefillah, then I've just left it sort of hanging. Like, I have the recognition that this is God's domain. Okay, now what? Well, I have to function in this domain, so now I have to implement that recognition. In other words, the way to implement that recognition is, if it's truly God's domain, I need him to help me. Because I don't have really the tools to function properly. I'm missing tools for one reason or another, either because of my own doing or because of just my human nature. I'm missing, I need assistance. A person needs assistance. I mean, that is true. A person needs assistance. A person has that in recognition that he's not complete. I mean, that he has to either go out and get things himself. He's not self-sufficient. He is a dependent existence. So either he has to go out and get things himself, and if he's capable, fine. But once he's reached the limit of his capabilities, a person needs assistance. You see? So the natural result of a person recognizing this is somebody else's domain is, I have to now seek assistance to function in that domain. I have to seek existence from that being to function in his domain. If I don't do that, then it's not really bishleimusa, because I have the recognition this is his domain, but then when I now go out to implement what I need, I sort of ignore that recognition. And now I finish the Kabbalah Malchus Shemayim, and then I go to work. Okay, well, are you going to be successful? It's an attempt, but your actions show that you haven't completely absorbed that concept. Because if a person completely absorbed that concept, he'd say, okay, going to work is important, but it's not the whole picture. It's like Yaakov. He prepared for war. He sent gifts, and he was Mispalo. Okay, just to be Mispalo, that wouldn't be rational either. Because exhaust your opportunities, but this is one of your opportunities. So if a person goes out to work, but fails to be misfalo, it means that he's missing in terms of that recognition. Because why wouldn't you avail yourself of the other phenomena? You're working in the physical world, but there's the metaphysical too. And if that's a real thing to you, the metaphysical, so then the first step would be appeal to the source of the metaphysical. Cover that base. Then cover your other bases. Now what you could, the actions you have to do, so now go out and do the actions you have to do. But no reason, just like it would be irrational for a person to be misfollow and then sit back and do nothing. It would be irrational for a person to run out and do things and not be misfollow. In either case, you're ignoring one of the factors that are the important factors in your reality, in your framework. I mean, you have to function in both frameworks. Both frameworks exist equally. So if you don't, you're not misfollow, then the reality of that framework is not complete, really. It's incomplete. It means it's not a total reality. You didn't really follow through. You didn't really implement what you internalized. You internalized it, but then you stopped short. You see, so to fully internalize it, it means the person has to now carry out what he internalized. The natural next step is to be misfollow. See, so that's really part of the recognition that it's God's domain. Yeah.
I'm a little bit confused.
Okay.
Aren't Kriyashma and Sila going along slightly different tracks? It seems like Kriyashma is recognizing that God is one, whereas Tvila is recognizing God's omnipotence. Is that true, or is it all, resulting from the fact, from the recognition that God is one?
It has to be, yeah, because you can't say, I mean, we look at it as separate things, right? But really, the most essential recognition that we could have is God's Yichud Hashem. So the fact that he's omnipotent and all of the other things fit into that concept of Yichud Hashem. If you'd say he's not omnipotent, then you'd say he's limited. That would be a lack of Yichud. I mean, I don't have a full grasp of the concepts, but I'm just saying that's what you'd have to deduce, that if the most essential recognition is Yichud, then it has to be that everything else would fit into that. You see, that's the core. So that's the core. It means when a person has that recognition of the Yichud Hashem, and that this is God's domain, you know, could we really, you know, if a person has a recognition, a true recognition of Yichud Hashem, involved in that is God's domain. This is God, and I now, that would be a natural, the Mishnah is saying that's a natural result of the Yichud Hashem is also the fact that this is his domain. I'm living in his world. You see, Yichud Hashem means he's the ultimate reality. I mean, that's part of the idea of Yichud, that he's the ultimate, and that everything that exists exists because of him. You know, I don't know exactly how those two concepts are tied together, but they have to be tied together, right? Because we say that he's one. So if you tell me, well, his oneness is one thing, but the fact that he's in control and it's his domain is another thing. Well, then he's not one anymore. You know what I mean? So the concept of Yichud means we see different expressions, but it all is one source. You see? It's all one source. So that's the thing, that's the thing. You can see that that's a very important concept of that's the most fundamental idea, this recognition, and I guess the Zahiris, you know, is perhaps also tied to the fact that it's a recognition that a person tends to avoid. A person wants to live in his world. That's why the Gemara says if a person greets his friend first, it's like he's making a bala, because it means he wants to. That's the real world for him, the artificial world. But the real world, he's avoiding that world. That world he's not so comfortable in. You see, so therefore the Zahiris is countering the tendency the other way. But this is really, everything relies on this, really. Interesting.
Yes. Yeah. So what exactly is the Zahiris?
The Zahiris is that this is a fundamental, and it's something that is against what people want. It's the fundamental, and it's the thing that people object to the most. It's the greatest resistance is against this. This is the most fundamental, and it's what carries with it the greatest resistance. that's the idea of a Bodhisattva is that man is the center. And the idea of Kabbalah Zomach HaShemayim is that God is the center. So those two concepts are diametrically opposed, and the concept of God being the center has the greatest resistance because of the opposite concept, that man wants to be the center. You see, and the Avodah Zarah is really just an expression of that, of the, you know, deification of man. All of the Avodah Zarahs have to do with human traits, projecting the human trait onto the scene. That's the deification of man. And that's what the thing that bothers a person the most in the concept of God is that it removes man from the scene. That's why the first thing a person wants to do when he wakes up is he wants to socialize. He doesn't want to go to shul. And if he has to go to shul, he'll socialize on the way. But davening, that's why davening is the hardest thing. Because it's just a withdrawal from man, from the world of man. That's what it is. It's a withdrawal from the world of man. A person does not want to withdraw. He wants to be in that world. See, the only problem is that world really doesn't exist. That's the only problem. It'd be great if it existed, but it really doesn't exist. It's just something in your mind.
So the laziness is a result of that conflict.
The what?
The laziness is
a result of that conflict. That's right. The guy's lazy because he doesn't want to do it. It's not an enjoyable, not something he's looking forward to.
Or he's too tired anymore.
What's that, too tired? That's right.
Thinking then, thinking practically good on my bed anymore. It's just really hard.
Not unless someone knocks on your door and says, hey, you have to work, and then next day's a job,
right.
You know?
Hey, you just won the lottery ticket. What?
Me?
Whoa.
What?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
That's it. All right.
Yeah.
Very good. Go ahead.